Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you this week?
Hey, Carlos, I am fantastic. What a great weekend for golf. Jimmy Walker won at Baltusrol for the fourth first-time major winner this year. Maria Jutanagarn collected her first major title at Woburn in the Women's British. And we're getting very close to the Olympics, Carlos. I know that excites you. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go. It's very, very near, just a couple of weeks away. But, hey, also, there's something that's going to be at the end of September. That's a little bit farther. But, hey, we are going to talk about it because – everybody wants to know what's going on after, especially what happened at the PGA Championship. It's the Ryder Cup, the rankings, everything, the captains, and RBIG's none other than Team USA's captain, David Slav III. So you don't want to miss that interview right before we go into the practice range for it. But right away, we're going to start, as usual, with our weekend backspin, where, like you mentioned, the PGA Championship. Jimmy Walker, hey, he had to play 36 holes on Sunday to win the 98th PGA Championship at Baltusrol Golf Club in New Jersey by a single stroke from world number one and defending champion Jason Day. Walker has won five times on the PGA Tour and also appeared in the Ryder Cup. So he's certainly someone who the golf world would expect to win a major. However, he has had a disappointing season with five missed cuts and without a top 10 since mid-June. It is a shock that he won this past week. Jason Day and Henrik Stenson were expected to be the guys to gallop away from the field, much like Stenson and Phil Mickelson did at Royal Troon at the Open Championship. But a hole bunker shot on the 8th, on the 10th, followed by a long birdie putt on 11th, meant that Walker was in the mood to fight for the title. Jason Day really fought to hold on to the title he won last year, and after bogeying the first two holes, he came back with a couple of birdies, but he left his biggest moment to his final iron shot on 18th, which set up a dramatic eagle and to move just a shot behind Walker. Walker held his nerve to par the 72nd hole and to win by a single shot, and the Texan was humble after his victory was confirmed. The other main character in this drama was the golf course. Baltusrol is one of the oldest and most highly respected layouts in the States, and with the best golfers in town, so the New Jersey faithful came out in their droves. With their typical over-animation, the fans created an atmosphere befitting of a major. Whoever was going to win would have to do so in front of a crowd, not afraid to say what they think. But in the end, the venue itself was not an examination paper that will live long in the memory. The wide fairways and vast greens had been softened by Saturday's deluge, reducing the final day's play to golf by numbers. The creativity and control that separates the very best from the also-rans at majors simply was not a factor. The only uncertainty was over how much backspin to allow for. What's more, all too often, the fairway bunkers were like islands of sanctuary floating within far more penal fake rough. At majors, wayward shots should be punished, but all too often, that wasn't the case. As fine a layout as this Fillinghurst Classic is, this was more like a typical PGA Tour challenge than an iconic major test. Not that Jimmy Walker would care about it. But hey, it took Jimmy Walker 9 years and 188 starts to win his first PGA Tour title at the Fries.com Open in 2013. Now, less than 3 years later, he's a six-time Tour victor and a major champion. In a testament to the strength of major championships, at 48th in the official World Golf Rankings, Walker is the lowest-ranked major winner since Keegan Bradley won the PGA Championship at the Atlanta Athletic Club in 2011. He moved all the way up to 15th with this win. He's also now only the third wire-to-wire PGA champion in the last 20 years, joining Tiger Woods in 2000 and Phil Mickelson in 2005, who also did it here at Baltusrol. Walker wins also makes 2016 only the fifth year in the modern era to boast four first-time major winners with Danny Willett, Dustin Johnson, Stenson, and finally Walker. Jason Day, while he finished runner-up for the fourth time in his major career, all since the beginning of 2011, he has the second most runner-ups in that span behind only Phil Mickelson. Henrik Stenson was trying to become the second player over 40 to win consecutive majors, he finishing the top 10 for the 11th time in his career, all since 2008. And this win by Walker means that Jordan Spieth went majorless in 2016 after winning two majors last year. The last player to win a major after a multi-major season was Tiger Woods in 2006. All I got to say left is, hey, this has been an outstanding year in golf so far. It has been the year of the breakthrough. That's what I call it. With all these new major winners, which speaks volumes of the depth of men's golf, there's still to come the return of golf to what is undoubtedly the biggest sporting event in the world, and that is the Olympics. Then after that, yes, there's those things called the FedEx Cup and the Ryder Cup that seem of some importance, at least in golf, since they both together, along with the four majors and the WGCs, will never rival the importance and relevance of the Olympics. But anyway, Fred, on the final note, on the men's side, it seems like the big three have been put on hold, at least for this year, as it has the torrid pace that the 20-somethings established last year. This year, the 30 and over crowd have won 27 titles, and the 20-somethings have won only 15. Jason Day definitely has established himself as the best in the world right now, but the rest has stepped back to the pack. So, what's your take, Fred?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Yeah, you know, Jordan Spieth had a great year. You know, he hasn't won a major, but he's had a pretty strong year, coming off a great year last year. Jason Day, you know, another really good year. You know, got some wins. Finish runner-up at a major, that's pretty strong. Rory, yeah, you know, he's been up and down, but he's shown some flashes. Those three guys, you know, they're going to be there. They're going to have their time. They're going to maybe next year they'll break out again. Who knows? But hey, let's talk about the PGA. Jimmy Walker, of course, he was the big story. Led pretty much wire to wire, as you mentioned. He toiled on the web.com and, you know, for about 6 years on the PGA Tour before he got his first win. But he seems to be getting the hang of this winning thing. Walker birdied the 17th to open up the three-stroke margin, and that was huge because Jason Day, who'd been hanging around, made that eagle at the last, but he was still a shot behind because of that birdie that Walker made on 17. So that was big. And Walker tried to make a mess of the 18th, but he ended up with par, and that was good enough. Hey, Daniel Summerhays recorded five birdies on the back nine to finish solo third. He wins a trip to the Masters. Henrik Stenson, you mentioned him. He was a factor, but a double bogey knocked him out of contention. Martin Kaymer, playing alongside Stenson, made the biggest move up seven spots with a -4, 66 on Sunday to finish T7. With Kaymer and Robert Streb. Hideki Matsuyama, you always like Hideki. He may have played the best of anyone from tee to green, but couldn't make a putt. Finished T4 with Brooks Koepka, who was gamely playing on a bad ankle. Made rookie mistake kind of there at the one hole. He hooked one into the trees, tried to make a hero shot out, didn't work, hit another tree. That just kind of did him in right there. Surprisingly, Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia, and Dustin Johnson missed the cut. That was a big story on Friday night, Saturday morning. Carlos, who is Tyrell Hatton? I had to look this guy up. Why haven't we been talking about him? Couple of minor tour wins from England, and he's been playing on the European Tour since 2014. He qualified for five of the last seven Open Championships, and is number 8 on the European Tour of Merit this year. He's extremely hot right now. Runner-up at the Scottish Open, followed that with a T5 at Royal Troon 3 weeks ago. He posted another top 10 finish in ball control in the PGA Championship, and at just 24 years old, maybe someone we need to keep an eye on. Hey, here's an oldie but goodie. Patty Harrington finished T13. He tied with Spieth, Webb Simpson, Emiliano Grillo, and Patrick Reed. The rain delay on Saturday forced 36 holes for the leaders on Sunday. Many are questioning why the PGA did not regroup the threesomes and avoid the rains later in the day. They could have gone up early and threesomes been done by the time rain came up. Could have had a normal finish on Sunday, but that's the PGA. They decided not to do that. The other big story was the preferred lies on Sunday for the first time ever in a major championship. No way they could have played the ball down. Did you see the mud on nearly every shot that the camera zoomed in on? They were plugging the fairways, big chunks of mud on them. So they had to play preferred lies. They had to play it. Carlos, I picked up some scuttlebutt while I was at the PGA. And the other thing is I got to stand Tuesday. I was standing right behind Jimmy Walker on the range watching the ball. It just seemed like he was hitting the ball awfully well. Everything was right on the line. He was really doing a nice job. Some of the other guys were struggling, but Jimmy Walker was really swinging it well, and, you know, turned out he ends up winning. Some of the scuttlebutt, the old saying goes, you know, for everyone who is sad, someone else is happy. Well, with TaylorMade up for sale at any price and not having much success at finding a buyer, their parent company, Adidas, is probably going to cut off their funding and force their player reps to look for new equipment deals. Big checks with a lot of zeros will be heading into big-name golfers' bank accounts very soon. Just a few of the big names now looking for new deals. U.S. Open champion Dustin Johnson. You think somebody wouldn't like to have him swing at something else besides TaylorMade? Your guy Sergio Garcia. Odds are he's probably going to go back to Titleist for his equipment, and he's going to start his own clothing line. Who's going to manufacture for him? Well, he's good buddies with the Shark. Maybe, you know, it's almost with his ex-father-in-law there. So we'll see. Justin Rose plays TaylorMade. Jason Day plays TaylorMade. Number 1 in the world. So a lot of guys are going to be switching clubs here very soon, Carlos. Once we get past the Ryder Cup, there'll be a lot of news on that, a lot of activity. But TaylorMade's going to be dropping a lot of guys probably because they're just not going to have the money to be able to pay them to play their clubs. Carlos, that's all I have from the PGA Championship.
And there was another major this past weekend. That was the Ricoh Women's British Open, where Arya Yutanova, we said last week she was due to win her first major championship. And Fred, you texted me on Friday, it's a done deal, she's going to win it. And hey, she did. And the time came this past weekend as she won the British Women's Open. She became the first Thai to win a major tournament as she held her nerve to finish 3 shots ahead of Mo Martin and Miriam Lee. Yutanagarn, who blew a golden chance to win the first major of the year at the ANA Inspiration in California in April when bogeying their final 3 holes, guarded the final round level par 72 to finish 16 under for the tournament at Woburn's Marquess course. The 20-year-old led by 2 shots overnight after a 3rd round of 66, but her maiden major triumph looked in doubt when she double bogeyed the 13th after South Korean playing partner Lee completed a hat-trick of birdies at the 10th, 11th, and 12th to reduce a 5-shot deficit to 1. Martin, who parred the last 10 holes, also closed to within 2 shots of the lead, but Yutanagarn, she responded with a birdie at the 17th to move 2 shots clear, with 1 to play and make par at the last to secure the title, while Lee dropped the shot to finish tied for 2nd. Martin and Lee both finished on 13 under, while American Stacey Lewis finished outright 4th, 2 shots further back on the 9 under. Scotland's Katrina Matthew carded a 1-over final round of 73 after 4 birdies and 5 bogeys. She bogeyed 3 of the last 6 holes to finish tied for 5th in 9 under with South Korean Hannah Yang and Australia's Kerry Webb. Fred Yutanagarn, whose family ran onto the 18th fairway in the celebration and showered her with the water, now is among the favorites to follow up by taking gold at the Rio Olympics.
Yeah, Woburn was right for the taking last week, and Miriam Lee tied a record with that first round 62 at the Rico Williams British Open on Thursday. Lee was in the playoff with Jutanagarn and Lydia Ko at the Marathon Classic just a couple weeks ago. So those three players are really playing well right now. Ryo Jutanagarn, fourth win of the year, first major title, moves to number two in the Rolex ranking. Miriam Lee and Ariya are always smiling on the golf course. They have great attitudes, and they're just great to watch. They're a lot of fun, Carlos. Really enjoy watching them play. You know, this win sets up a new power structure in women's golf. You know, we've been seeing it coming for about a year. Ariya Jutanagarn, Brooke Henderson, and Lydia Ko are the three best players on the LPGA Tour. And at the ages of 18, 19, and 20, should be a force for some time to come. All three now have won majors this year, and we'll see them battle for more as time goes on. Jutanagarn is so strong. She can hit a 2-iron off most par 4 tees and be as long as most of the other women on tour. She's very accurate with it and finds a ton of fairways. Brooke Henderson is the Arnold Palmer of the group. She never met a pin position that she didn't like or one she didn't think she could hit it to. She's aggressive. We could see her struggle at times, a la Phil Mickelson, but she will win in bunches, and it's a lot of fun to watch. Lydia Ko, as I've said in the past, Ben Hogan has been reincarnated as Lydia Ko. She finds fairways, hits greens, but is a much better putter than Ben ever was. She's unflappable and just plays her game. Woburn was a great course for the women to play, and I hope they return there soon. Charlie Hall, favorite going in this week because it's her home course, admitted that the pressure of playing in front of the hometown fans may have been a bit much for her. She skied to a 75 on Saturday, but finished with a strong 69 on Sunday to finish T17. If the tour plays on short, tight golf courses, put your money on Mo Martin. She's the Mike Reed radar of the women's tour. Very, very consistent. She finishes solo third at Woburn last week. Also a pretty good week for Lexi Thompson, the opposite end of the spectrum from Mo Martin. I thought Woburn might be too tight for her, but she posted a T8 finish, a pair of 72s on Thursday, and again on Sunday were her undoing. All in all, it was a great week for women's golf. With the Women's British Open in the morning and the PGA Championship in the afternoon, it was a great week to be a golf fan, Carlos. So now the women are off. They're going to be heading down to the Olympics here in a couple weeks. So we won't have much to talk about them for a week or so, but it's been a good season. It's been a great 11-week run for the women, Carlos.
It definitely has. And there was action also on the Web.com Tour. Fred, and I believe you have something for us, you and Jay, or he follow up a record-setting 58 with a 65 and run away with the title there at the Ellie Mae Classic. So what happened there?
Well, you've heard of Steven Yeager, right? I mean, you know who he is, right? No.
No.
Comes out of nowhere. 27-year-old German-born pro entered a week at TPC Stonebury outside the top 100 on the money list on the web.com, then fired a mind-boggling four-round total of, wait for it, 30 under par to win his first career web.com tour title by 7 shots over Ryan Gibson. They might want to do something to that golf course. That's kind of like a pitch and putt. Listen to these scores, Carlos. 58. He's got a 58. 65. 64. 63. Total 250. 30 under. 30 under. That is unbelievable. Yeager not only set a new single round record with his 58 on Thursday, but the 250 aggregate is the best on either the PGA Tour Champions or Web.com Tour ever. Yeager entered the season with conditional status and steadily moved up with a series of solid finishes. He came into the week outside the top 100 at number 102, but leaves California at number 20 and solidly inside the 25 to earn a PGA Tour card for 2017. He has played okay this season with 8 cuts made in his 11 starts. But his previous best finish was a T11 earlier in June at Punakana Resort Club Golf Championship. Now, at the very minimum, he's set on the Web.com Tour through 2017, and he's suddenly positioned to earn a PGA Tour card for the first time. You know what, Carlos? This is what's possible when it all comes together for a week on the Web.com Tour.
That's incredible. I mean, those scores were ridiculous. I think he was just playing from the front tees or something. He was amazing the way he did it.
58.
Kudos to him. He did it. So kudos to him for whatever he did it. Front tees, back tees, whatever it was, he did it great. So congratulations to him on his, also, you know, securing his way to the PGA Tour. I don't think he'll do it there, but we'll see. Anyway, that will wrap up our weekend backspin. Now we're going to take our first short break, and when we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 news, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 news. And Fred, you're going to tee it off as usual. You're going to talk. We're going to be talking a lot about the Ryder Cup today, and you have some news about Darren Clarke and one more vice captain than his name.
Well, yeah, Darren Clarke addressed the media at the PGA Championship last week, and of course, he claimed the European team will enter the Ryder Cup as the underdog again. Even though they have won 7 of the last 9 competitions, he also named veteran Sam Torrence another vice captain. So Torrence is his 5th and final assistant captain pick. Torrence is from Scotland. He's 62 years old and was a member of 8 Ryder Cup teams for Europe and captain of the victorious 2002 European team at the Belfry. Clarke had already named Ian Poulter, Padraig Harrington, Paul Laurie, and Thomas Bjorn as assistants. Torrence's position was confirmed by Clarke at Baltusrol. He said, "I wanted somebody there who has been through it all before, who has had that Ryder Cup captain experience, part of my backroom team. Sam thankfully accepted my invitation to join the team. I'm very pleased and privileged that Sam is going to be a part of it. He's absolutely delighted as I am. He's got a big heart for the Ryder Cup, and I'm sure that will show through during the week. With all the preparations that Clarke has been making for the European Ryder Cup team, Oliver Brown of the Telegraph wonders if Clarke isn't micromanaging just a little bit. He's had multiple visits to the BBC's Northern Ireland studios to help perfect his captain's speech. He's enlisted data analysis to furnish him with minutiae about every European golfer in contention, from their accuracy with medium irons to how they play the par fives. Such is his obsessive compulsive nature, he's even started to agonize about the aesthetics of the team room right down to the color of the placemat." Carlos, we're going to talk a little more about the Ryder Cup later in the show, but the attention given to the captain's every decision is becoming almost too much to handle for me.
No, totally, definitely. And I saw that article. Does he really need 5 captains? I mean, it's certainly I think he's overdoing it, just trying to get every single detail right. And I don't know if he's scared or what, but hey, like you mentioned, I don't buy that they are the underdogs after winning 7 of the last 9. So no way. But hey, let's talk a little bit about the Olympics. And let me start talking about Sayuri Pak. You know, she inspired a nation of South Korean girls to grow into the most dominant force in women's golf with her victory at the U.S. Women's Open at Black Wolf's Run in 1998. In Bay Park, Soyoung Ryu and Na Yeon Choi are among a legion of young South Korean golfers called the Sayuri Kids because Pak inspired them with her U.S. Women's Open victory. Pac is set to bring the curtain down on a career that brought her 5 majors, 39 victories worldwide, and almost $13 million in prize money. Her South Korean trailblazer concedes golf never brought her happiness. She said at a news conference last Wednesday that she sacrificed much in pursuit of her goals and wished she would have been more generous with herself. She has struggled with injury in recent years and dropped down to the world rankings with number 356. But now she has a new north coming up. And one four of those kids are looking forward to, as their inspirational leader will be the coach at the Rio Olympics of their powerful lineup that includes 4 of the world's top 10 players in Inbae Park, Se-young Kim, Amy Yang, and In-ji Chun. While there are concerns about the fitness of world number 3 Park, who has endured a woeful season due to back and thumb problems and has not played since early June, Park said her presence gave the team confidence. Park said, and I quote, "I think the best case scenario would be the same for everyone, to win gold, silver, and bronze medals. It means a lot to our players to wear the national flag, and they're doing their best they can to represent their country," end of quote. Up-and-coming generation of golfers, men specifically, listen to that. There's nothing like representing your country in the Olympics and winning a medal, period, nothing. But hey, but not everything is peaches and cream with the powerful South Korean team. Dave Poitrant, caddy to Amy Yang, suffered what family and friends called a serious heart attack last Monday night while visiting friends in Indianapolis. Jeff King, who is the regular caddy to Derek Ernest on the PGA Tour and a longtime friend to Poitrant and a fellow caddy, is spearheading a support effort among tour caddies and has set up a give-forward page to help Poitrant with medical costs. Poitrant is registered as Yang's caddy for the Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro in 3 weeks, but King said it's unlikely Poitrant would be able to caddy there. Poitrant was off this past week with Yang not playing the Rico Women's British Open because she preferred to take the week off as preparation for the Olympics. And also on the Golf Olympics-related news, another golfer might be canceling her flight to Rio, but not because of scheduling conflicts or the so-called Zika virus, or the Zika excuse. Maria Vershikova, a ladies European Tour pro from Moscow, is the only Russian golfer who qualified for the 2016 Olympics in Rio, but her Olympic dreams are in limbo after the doping scandal by the WADA was brought attention to the International Olympic Committee, who recommended an unprecedented blanket ban on Russian athletes for what its officials called the single biggest doping scandal of all time. The IOC decided to leave it up to each individual international sports federation to vet each Russian athlete under its jurisdiction. Well, they wash their hands. But there has been no response yet from the International Golf Federation, even though they did issue a statement saying that they are swiftly carrying out the requirements and responsibilities that this decision has imposed upon the IGF to ensure that the rights of all our athletes to a clean sport and a clean Olympic Games are protected. Fred, I say rank in the world at 338. Let her go. It's safe to say she's clean. Let her live her Olympic dream.
Yeah, I don't. We'll see about it. I don't. It may not touch her. As they say, there's only going to be part of the team that's going to be affected, the Russian team. So, hey, did you see the story this week about the Australians trying to check into their assigned rooms and the when they flushed the toilets, the water ran down the walls. There was a fire. And they had to evacuate the building. And so while they were outside, the fire was put out, and other guys ran in and stole a bunch of their stuff, stole a computer. Carlos, I wouldn't want to be down there. There is no way I'd want to be down there in Brazil. There is just too much going on. I know you can't wait to watch it, but, oh, my goodness, I hope nothing bad happens down there.
You know what they have to do? I mean, the golfers, they should have done what the NBA is doing. They rented a whole cruise for them. Did you see that? They have a whole cruise that they rented for the NBA, for the women's and for the men's basketball players. They have a whole cruise that they rent that is there. They have a security detail of 250 police officers. They have bulletproof glasses to separate the public from them, from the cruise. And they even have police guarding the perimeter in the water. They should have rented one. They have enough money, you know. They can do that.
Yeah.
They don't have to bring the Olympic medals. It's all excuses.
Hey, Las Vegas and Phil Mickelson's gambling, as well as stock manipulating buddy Billy Walworth, are back in the news this week. It seems the Oakland Raiders are eyeing a move to Las Vegas, since they missed out on the Los Angeles sweepstakes, and are looking at some of Billy's golf course properties to build the stadium. Plus, the Wynn Hotel will trade its golf course for Paradise Park. John Stragg of Golf Digest wrote last week that the NFL's Oakland Raiders want to go to Las Vegas, and they want to build their future stadium on a golf course. It's been reported that Valley High is the primary course being considered. Sitting in the shadow of Mandalay Bay Hotel, Valley High is on the southern end of the strip in Las Vegas between the airport and Interstate 15. It's part of Walters Golf, owned by the renowned gambler Billy Walters, who recently was indicted on insider trading charges in the same case that Phil Mickelson was identified as a defendant. The course boasts opulent lagoons and streams, pure Augusta sand, volcanic rock outcroppings, a total of 4,000 tropical trees, including 2,500 towering palms and over 100,000 exotic plants, with the glowing glimmer of Las Vegas Strip in the backdrop. Golf became overdone in Las Vegas, and between that and Billy Walters' need for cash for his legal troubles, Valley High has become a good location for the new Raiders Stadium. The Wynn Hotel announced it will tear up its golf course and build an amusement park. Evidently, CEO Steve Wynn has visions of Walt Disney. He told investors, "I want to give them something to do. I don't give a damn if they put a nickel in the slot machine. I want them to pay admission. I want them to stay in my rooms. I want them to drink my booze and eat our food." Sounds like a plan. This is how he introduced what will be the biggest development his company has undertaken in Las Vegas in almost a decade. The project, as of now called Paradise Park, is expected to cost around $1.5 billion, with a B, and will replace the 18-hole golf course at Wynn Encore, the company's flagship resort, with a giant Clearwater Lagoon, another hotel tower, and much, much more. It'll just, you know, it's just going to be quite a deal. It's going to be paradise in the desert. With all the grandeur expected, the main draw will be the lagoon, as I mentioned. It's going to be quite a deal. There's going to be a 1,000-room hotel, 250,000 square feet of meeting space, restaurants, and other attractions, live performances, water skiing, paddle boarding, zip lining, nightly firewalk shows, nightly fireworks shows, and a whole lot more. So, Carlos, if you're heading to Las Vegas, you'll have a couple less golf courses to choose from if you want to get away from the gambling tables and play a little golf.
I don't like that. I don't like it. That's their business. But anyway, you know, I have been saying since Keith Pelley came and took charge of the European Tour, I think he will bring a huge change fast, and I'm looking forward to it. Well, on the eve of the PGA Championship, I'll be one that lands earlier than normal and which will take a few days of golf to get excited about. Details of the European Tour's long-rumored premier series were emerging. Golf Week's Alex Micheli reported that Chief Executive Officer Keith Pelley's concept of a World Tour /answer to the PGA Tour will be a select group of events with a presenting sponsor. The European Tour announced a change to its schedule that it might seem small, but it's the beginning of a major structural move that the Tour will announce later this year. The 2017 Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, hosted by Rory McIlroy, was moved to 2 weeks before the British Open, creating a 3-week links swing that will be part of an 8-tournament run with the working title of Premier Series. The premier series, the brainchild of current chief executive Keith Pelley, was created to stem the flood of veteran talent to the PGA Tour and keep younger European players focused on their home tour. The plan focuses on certain parts of the schedule with increased purses, not to just compete directly with opposite PGA Tour events, but also to emphasize certain times of the year on the European Tour. With the first phase of the series to be announced at the British Masters in mid-October, the Tour intends to implement the program over the next 2 or 3 years. The Premier Series will consist of 10 tournaments in 2018 and 12 events in 2019. Pelley is also in discussions with a major corporation to act as the presenting sponsor of the series. Since this is all about the money, right? Pelley sees big purses, minimum of $7 million, to make the tournaments highly coveted by players, fans, and sponsors. Last week, we talked about the genius move by Pelley to bring in a revolutionary certain version of golf into an event with clubs and time restriction, music, and the players representing their own countries. Now, Pelley is making a huge move towards making the European Tour the viable option they can truly be to the PGA Tour. I have said it since we first reported Keith Pelley was taking over the European Tour. This guy's no joke. He is there to make an impact. He has a track record of huge success in all he's done, and I am totally sold since then. He will make the European Tour into a very attractive alternative to the PGA Tour. All I see and hear from this side of the pond is, yeah, blah, 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 it's never going to happen. Well, I have news for all the stock-ups that want to continue that attitude and not do something to modernize the game and step up to the challenge here. Being stuck in the past is like walking forward with your back facing to the front. You will always miss out on what is in front of you. And Commissioner Fincham, next in line, Jay Monahan, and any other big shot on the PGA Tour? Keith Pelley is raising the bar and the stakes with the European Tour. Fred, if this were chess, Keith Pelley has just said, check.
Yeah, you know, if we keep talking about it, he comes up with all kinds of ideas. It's going to be really interesting to watch and see how they turn out for him. Hey, Carlos, if you're looking for an investment opportunity, I got one for you. The Golf Board, you know, we've been following the Golf Board phenomenon for some time. And if you remember, we even had the president of the company on the show a couple years ago when I visited with him and tried out the Golf Board in Oregon. It was recognized as the best new product at the 2014 PGA Golf Show in Orlando, and the company is now looking for new investors. It has turned to email and social media to find a new influx of funds. The Golf Boards are available for rent at over 200 courses, with a potential market of 34,000 courses worldwide. The company appears to be well-positioned to take advantage of the massive potential market for its product. Golf Board's also looking to expand to additional markets like resorts, industrial, and all-terrain applications, just to name a few. You know, Carlos, in all reality, I just don't see the Golf Board as a viable vehicle for most golf courses. There might be a small percentage of guys that really like it and work for it, but the mass public, it's just there's no way they're going to be able to handle it. I really think there's too many liability issues. However, for younger millennials, it may be just a ticket to get them to the course, speed up play, and make it attractive to a wider audience. I do like the application for industrial, especially large warehouses where getting around for managers and foremen is a concern. Additional use at resorts as a novelty like bike rentals in a vacation area should also work for the Golf Board. Anyway, if you're looking to invest a few bucks from your retirement fund, the Golf Board offers a unique opportunity, Carlos.
Are you going to invest?
No.
Me neither. And with that, we wrap up our Power 5 news. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we have our VIG, very important guest of the week, Team USA captain on the Ryder Cup, Davis Love III. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. He is pro player, veteran, and Team USA captain on the Ryder Cup, Davislav III. Fred, what do you have in store for us?
Yeah, Carlos, I got to talk to Davislav one-on-one a few weeks ago and taped a short piece for Play as we got near the Ryder Cup. And he also addressed the media last week at the PGA. He's looking for certain things now, players that pair up well in the team events. And we're going to talk more about it after this, but I think the team's pretty well set. I just don't see a lot of question marks out there. But Davis did talk about some younger guys. He was watching this, and we had a great little chat. So just a little four-minute piece, so go ahead and play it, Carlos.
Let's play it.
We're here talking with Davislav, who is the captain of the 2016 Ryder Cup team that will be played up in Hazeltine at the end of September, beginning of October. Time's starting to count down a little bit.
Yeah, we're getting close. You know, guys are getting kind of locked up there at the top. You know, obviously Jordan Spieth got enough points to make the team twice, maybe. But, yeah, we're getting a little more serious, doing our close fittings. Guys are getting more and more focused on it, talking about playing practice rounds. So it's coming faster than maybe we want.
You played on six Ryder Cup teams yourself. You've been on numerous President's Cup teams. You've been assistant captains. You were the captain. What are you changing? What are you looking different? What did you learn from that maybe you're doing a little different this time?
When I was at Medina, neither one of them came out very well. But it's you know, we've lost three in a row, and it's tough. That's why we created this committee, and we got some of our former captains and possible future captains involved, and all working hard to try to get this team more prepared than they've been for the last three or four. So we're excited about the direction we're going. We're going to kind of build on the past and try to forget it at the same time.
You mentioned in the room there that you're relying a lot on your captains, and you kind of divided up the workload, and you're all sharing some different parts of it.
Yeah, I think when you've got a group like that, you've got to lean on them for their expertise. You know, Tom Lehman's a Minnesota native, so he's helping us with everything to deal with Hazeltine and with the Twin Cities and getting practice rounds organized. And then so everybody's got a role, and I think that's the only way we're going to, you know, cover right now 15 or 20 guys is to split it up a little bit. Then when we get to the matches, I can have one veteran guy out watching each group for me, whether we're practicing or whether we're playing. So it's nice to have, great leadership. And so I don't look at it as I'm the captain and I got four or five assistants. I think we just got a good group of guys to help lead this team.
You were saying also that you just signed the captain's agreement for the format, that you would be opening with the foursomes in the morning. Foursomes has always historically been a weak format for the U.S. team. Is there anything that you can look ahead and maybe plan for or do or maybe line up guys to play together, thinking ahead on that?
We like to do that first. It plays a lot faster. And, you have the four balls in the afternoon, which takes a lot longer. We've traditionally, I think Hal Sutton might have been the only one that switched them up a little bit. You know, we like going alternate shot early, getting done by lunch, and you can make your pairings a little bit quicker. I think it just flows better for the whole tournament.
As you mentioned, the top eight guys are looking pretty strong right now. Just outside, you've got Brooks Koepka. Kuchar, as you mentioned, has been earning some points, playing steadily. J.B. Holmes is in the mix. Then you got to Charlie Hoffman. Who are some young guys maybe that you're looking at that maybe are just a little bit off the radar right now that you think maybe are going to be a factor?
Well, I think Justin Thomas is playing well. Chris Kirk is showing signs that he's really playing well. Chris is probably down about 30th in points. So, Kevin Na just keeps consistently playing well. So there's some guys that aren't really kind of your household names, but that we're looking at, we're watching for, and I wouldn't put it past Chris Kirk to get on a roll like he did for Tom Watson's Ryder Cup. He almost made that team right at the last minute. So he's a guy that I'm watching that's outside of really the top 20.
In the last Ryder Cup, a couple young guys, Jordan Spieth, who now has a little more experience, Patrick Reed, Ricky Fowler, they were very big factors in that Ryder Cup. Are you looking at them to maybe carry a little bit more of a leadership role going forward here?
Yeah, well, certainly Jordan. Everybody looks to Jordan. You know, Patrick's a fiery competitor. He was great at over in Glen Eagles, and he was great for Jay Haas at the President's Cup over in Korea. So I think he's going to be a guy that we're going to look to. You know, put those guys together. You've got some youth, some passion, and some excitement, and that's what we really need. And Ricky's just one of the all-time greats in the team room. He's played, I guess, maybe three or four teams, and he's already become the fun guy, the team leader, the spirit of the team. So I think we're in good shape on young guys, and we got obviously a few veterans in there. So I think we're in good shape.
Well, Davis, thank you so much for talking to us, and good luck going forward.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot. All right, appreciate it.
There you have it. That was Babyslav III, and I believe that will fit right into what we're going to talk right now on the practice range versus the Ryder Cup. And obviously, this was a couple of weeks ago, and the rankings were different than what they are right now, after especially what happened right now at the 98th PGA Championship. So, Fred, let's jump right into our practice range, and we can comment on what he said and some things about the Team USA and Team Europe as well. But let's start, you know, by saying that farewell Bartooth Roll and the 98th PGA Championship, the next stop, Hazel Team, National Golf Club, and the Ryder Cup. With just four Ryder Cup qualifying events remaining, we look at how the current teams could be lining up for the 40th edition of the biennial tournament, which runs from September 30th to October 2nd on Hazel Team in Minnesota. Players have until August 28th to qualify through the top 9 point slots for the Team Europe, top 8 for the Team USA, with team captains Darren Clarke and Davis Love III having the final say over the 3 picks and 4 for the US in September. To be sure, many of the game's greatest golfers have a few engagements in between, with the forthcoming Olympics for a relative few, the 4-week FedEx playoffs for everyone after that. But the PGA of America on Monday began breaking down the season's last major championship and packing up the grandstands, leaderboards, even ropes and stakes, many of them bound for a Hazel Team National in Chaska for the biennial showdown between the United States and Team Europe. Let's start with Team USA. You know, the best from both sides are thinking about that last week in September, even as American anchors Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, and Dustin Johnson, among others, hit toward an uncommon extended summertime break these next 3 weeks. Veteran Tour Pro Jimmy Walker's wire-to-wire victory at Baltus Roll and young gun Brooks Koepka's fourth-place finish reshaped the U.S. team point standings. Walker's first major title and the World Ryder Cup points thrust him from 29th place all the way to 4th. Barring some mathematical miracle, he's practically guaranteed a return trip to a Ryder Cup he said he never wanted to miss out on again after playing in his first just 2 years ago in Scotland. Koepka moved in from 9th, just outside the top 8, who will receive automatic invitations a month less than a month from now, to 5th. In doing so, Bubba Watson dropped out of the top 8 to 9th, and Patrick Reed, Matt Kuchar, and Ricky Fowler all still find themselves on the outside looking in, at least until U.S. captain Davis Love III later decides his 4 wildcard picks. Walker played well his first time around at the Ryder Cup, having 3 matches and losing 1 of the first 2 days with Fowler as his playing partner before beating Lee Westwood in a Sunday single match. He credited playing under that kind of pressure to his PGA victory, a championship he led from start to finish and beat defending champion Jason Day by 1 shot. Even as he sat next to the PGA trophy, Walker hadn't yet processed the difference, 3,600 points, Ryder Cup points, make as he talked into the past rather than the present. Fowler, Reed, and Kuchar now all are bound for Brazil's and golf's return to the Olympics. Mickelson and Spieth, among others, are headed for a needed break. Mickelson said he hasn't had 3 weeks off in the summertime in more than 20 years and intends to use it to rest and prepare for all FedEx Cup events and the Ryder Cup. Davis Love wants to get some of his players to Hazeltine for more than a day before Ryder Cup week arrives. Last week, he specifically mentioned Spieth and Johnson, although Johnson said before the PGA began that he has played Hazeltine twice, the 2006 U.S. Amateur and the 2009 PGA, and doesn't intend to visit before both teams arrive Monday that week. Love said he doesn't have to worry about Mickelson, who has played three majors at Hazeltine in his preparation, but Mickelson said he'd like to see Hazeltine in advance. If the event began today, this would be the 8 U.S. automatic qualifiers to go with four captains pick. Dustin Johnson, number 1, Jordan Spieth, 2, number 3, Phil Mickelson, number 4, Jimmy Walker, number 5 is Brooks Koepka, number 6 is Zach Johnson, number 7, J.B. Holmes, number 8 is Brent Snedeker. The first five outs in the rankings are Bubba Watson, Patrick Reed, Matt Kuchar, Ricky Fowler, and Scott Piercy, and that leaves very far behind still Jim Furyk and Steve Stricker. So Fred Davis Love III has his work cut out for him in picking those picks, those four picks, captain's picks that he's going to have.
Yeah, you did a really good job of sorting that out. And to me, when I look at this thing, if I'm Davis Love, okay, J.B. Holmes is a wonderful player. I like him a lot. Brent Snedeker, wonderful player. They've not been playing all that great lately. You know, he really wants Ricky Fowler on the team. You know he wants Matt Kuchar. You know he wants Patrick Reed. And he probably wants Bubba Watson. So, if this thing stays the way it is, if J.B. Holmes and Brent Snedeker stay in the top eight, those next four are a lock. I don't see him changing. I don't see him going outside of those four guys. After that, you mentioned Scott Piercy. Then you got Bill Haas, Willie McGirt, Kevin Chappell, Duffner, Daniel Berger, and Charlie Hoffman. As you mentioned, Jim Furyk's clear down at 21. I know you'd like to have Furyk, but Furyk would have to pretty much win the Barkley to get himself up into position. I just don't see that happening. I'm sure it possibly could, but I just don't see it. So I think, you know, Carlos, I really think the American team's pretty well set. So the dates to remember here are, as you mentioned, the top eight are automatically on the team. Davis is going to choose four captain's picks, but three will come after the Barclays on August 28th. The remaining pick will come after the Tour Championship on September 25th. So, you know, I don't know how they're going to do that. He's basically going to make the pick, and the guy's going to have to jump on the plane. So he's going to have to let him know ahead of time, I would think. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do, how they're going to do that. He was laughing about it at the PGA last week, how they're going to figure that out. But they're going to have three early, and then they're going to wait on the last pick till the very last minute. But I think it's pretty much a done deal. I just don't see it changing much. I think you can pretty much write these down. These are the guys that are going to be in, Carlos.
I totally agree with you. I think there's no other way that he would go outside those four if those standings remain. And it's very difficult because there's no more double points like it happens on the majors, and that was why the big shakeup with Jimmy Walker and Brooks Koepka here after the PGA Championship. But J.B. Holmes and Brent Snedeker, I think that if they slip out, they might not get back in. So, but we'll see. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the European Tour, the European team, where European Ryder Cup captain Darren Clarke, like you said, he believes that all of his side
is heading to the European team is a whole different story, Carlos. We got a lot of question marks with the European team.
We do, and let me tell you that Darren Clarke, like you mentioned, he believes that although his side may head into this year's clash as underdogs, pre-tournament discussion of favorites will count for little once play begins. He readily concedes, like you mentioned, that the Americans might have the upper hand, but believes that the unpredictable nature of match play format is a great leveler. Rory McIlroy overtook Danny Willett after he tied Finn in fifth for finish at the Open and held on to his spot despite missing the cut at the PGA Championship. Sweden's Henrik Stenson remains in third place on the European points list after finishing alongside Kamer, in tie for seventh at Balthus Rolls Golf Club this weekend. The Open Champion moved ahead of Chris Wood after his victory at the 145th Open Championship last month at Royal Troon. After Wood in fourth, in fifth place is Sergio Garcia, followed by Justin Rose, Rafa Cabrera Bello, Andy Sullivan, and Matthew Fitzpatrick. Remember that Team Europe has 9 automatic qualifiers. Those are the top 9 right now. The Europeans pick 3, and the first 4 out after them are Sutton Kilson, Tyrrell Hatton, Lee Westwood, and Martin Kaymer. 2 players have seen their stock rapidly on the rise. The 31-year-old Martin Kaymer, who has finished inside the top 7 at 5 of his last 8 events, and although in 12th place on the European points list, his resurgent form has given European Ryder Cup team captain Darren Clarke a timely reminder of what he is capable of. The other is a guy you mentioned when you recap the PGA Championship, and that is Tyrrell Hatton, who shared 5th place with Rory McIlroy at Royal Troon, is also making his presence felt in the qualifying race, with the Englishman continuing his fine run of form with a tight 10th finish in the final major championship season, where the 24-year-old carded rounds of 71, 68, 66, and 68 for 7 under par total. However, with 5 rookies currently in Europe's automatic qualifying spots, Clarke may call up on 9-time Ryder Cup player Lee Westwood in a bid to continue the continent's recent success against the American side. However, Clarke admitted that his friendship with Westwood apparently will not influence the decision to select the Englishman should he not qualify automatically. He said, and I quote, "Friendship has no place when it comes to wild cards." End of quote. Fred, really, it doesn't matter. Friendship or not, Westwood will be on that team.
Well, yeah, I would think so. You know, the thing is, he's got some unknown talent in here. You know, you got Andy Sullivan, you got Matt Fitzpatrick, you got Chris Wood, you got Danny Willett. So, you know, of the top 9 there, you got some question marks of what you expect and what to look for. And, you know, I mentioned Tyrrell Hatton earlier, and here he is, you know. He's a factor. You know, he's up there, but would you choose him instead of Lee Westwood in a Ryder Cup? I don't think so. If he's on the short list, I just don't see it. And so you got Søren Jelsen, you got Martin Kaymer outside looking in, Tyrrell Hatton. So, you know, Kaymer played really well at the PGA. So I think you're looking at Kaymer, you're looking at Westwood for 2 of the 3 picks. Other than that, you know, somebody that gets a lot of press is that Andrew Johnson beef. You know, you might want him on the team just because he's a fun guy, you know, just to have around. I don't know. Clarke was giving him a good look. Rose moved up quite a bit, actually. He's, you know, he's in the mix there. So, you know, they got a good base there with Rory and with Stenson and with Sergio and with Justin Rose. But, man, you got a lot of unknowns in there. I just don't see them as nearly as strong as what they were in past years. So, you know, I think Clarke's got his work cut out on who he's going to pick from the group to fill out his team. You know, he's only got 3 picks, so I think it's going to be interesting who he picks, and it's going to be, I'm sure he's looking at who he can pair up with who, and I think he's going to be looking for some experience. So that's why I think, you know, you said Westwood, you know, I think he's got to be looking at that. I think he's got to be looking at Kaymer because they've been there, done that. Then maybe you bring in a guy like Tyrrell Hatton just, you know, as a wild card. You still got some other names out there, too, that they could be. But I don't know. I think you're right. I think Westy and Kaymer are probably there. But it's a lot more questionable for what Darren's going to do. By the way, he'll make his 3 captain's picks between August 29 and September 2 sometime in there. So we can watch for that then, Carlos.
Most definitely. And, yeah, I've heard about Andrew Johnston, but I think My thought would be that, like you said, Lee Westwood and Martin Kaymer are two that are going to be a lock, unless, you know, Martin Kaymer would drop down in form, but he's really playing well. And Tyrell Hatton has been playing lights out as well. So I would give him the chance. The thing, like you mentioned, is he has five rookies right now on his top nine. So definitely it's going to be a real challenge for him to see who's pick three will be. But, hey, looking forward to it and looking forward to the Ryder Cup.
You know, Francisco Molinari is not that far away either. I think he's in the top 15 or something like that. So, you know, there's another guy with experience that you may want to bring in to, I don't know, you know, do you play Sergio and Rafa Cabrera together? You know, who do you pair Fitzpatrick with? You know, do you put him with Stenson? You know, you got Willett there. You put him with Rose. You pair him up, the English guys together. There's just a lot of questions for Clark. I don't know. I bet he's got some sleepless nights trying to figure this thing out.
You know who I think it would be a good pairing for Fitzpatrick? I think that you would pair him very well with Rory McIlroy, because Matthew is straight as an arrow, very, very accurate. And when Rory is off, Matthew can pick it up, and they could complement each other very well. So I think that would be a good pairing for them. But, hey, I don't know. That's just my thought. But anyway, that will wrap up our practice range. That's our thoughts on what's going to be with the Ryder Cup. But, of course, that's still over a month away to go. So as soon as we get the captain's pick, we are going to be back on it, having all that to you and our thoughts as they move along with it, right for the Ryder Cup. Hey, now let's go to our final thoughts before we leave the show. I'm going to have one, and it's about the AGA and the Wyndham Worldwide, who announced a five-year partnership extension during Monday's opening ceremonies at the 2016 Wyndham Cup. The renewed agreement keeps Wyndham Worldwide as an AGA official partner, as the official hospitality partner of the AGA, with the title sponsor of Wyndham Cup through 2021. Wyndham Worldwide began sponsoring the Wyndham Cup in 2011, and in 2014, the company began endowing a $100,000 ACE grant to support talented junior golfers who lack the financial resources to play a national junior golf schedule. Since the ACE grant's inception in 2003, the AJGA has reimbursed more than $2.8 million to more than 800 junior golfers, and the program continues to grow because of the generous support of partners like Wyndham Worldwide. You know, the Wyndham Cup has been a marquee event since it began in 1990, as it brings together 40 of the country's top junior golfers in East versus West team match play tournament. The team match play format has created unforgettable pairings and has served as a glimpse into the future of college and professional golf, before becoming LPGA and PGA Tour pros. In Bay Park and Brian Harman were four-ball teammates in 2004, while Lexi Thompson and Morgan Hoffman team up in 2007. Morgan Pressel and Paula Creamer have been Solheim Cup teammates five times, but as junior golfers, they squared off against each other in the Wyndham Cup singles match in 2002. Other Wyndham Cup alumni include Ricky Fowler, Hunter Mahan, Ryan Moore, Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods, Amanda Bloomhurst, Kelly Booth, Allison Lee, Bill Haas, Matt Kuchar, Patrick Reed, Webb Simpson, Justin Thomas, Bubba Watson, Christy Kerr, and Brittany Lincecum. Fred, this is a great news for this tournament, and it started this morning at the Sandwich Club in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Yeah, you know, AJGA is such a great tournament schedule opportunity for top high school golfers, really. They get to travel around the country playing really well-run events against the best kids. And this is really where the top colleges find their golfers to fill out their teams, to do their recruiting. So AJGA is a big deal for the elite high school golfer. Hey, Carlos, while the PGA Tour was in Baltusrol for the PGA Championship, just across the river from the Big Apple, Masters champ Danny Willett got the chance to throw out the first pitch in the Yankees game. He traded in his golf shirt for a Yankees jersey and was joined by his wife and son at Yankee Stadium. So good deal for him. He got to see the Yankees. I don't know if I'd walk across the street to see him, but, you know, good for Danny Willett. Hey, Great story from Jason Sobel on ESPN about Cyril Walker, the 1924 U.S. Open champ, who died penniless and is buried near Baltusrol. He posted this story. Cyril Walker was one of the premier golfers at the age in the 20s. He lost his fortune and family in the 1929 crash and died penniless and buried in Potter's Field near Baltusrol. It's a very tragic story, but a really great read from Jason Sobel, who did it some time at the Golf Channel, but now is back with ESPN. So, Carlos, that's pretty much all I've got from here tonight. We're going to have we got some more golf to talk about next week. We got some things coming up. We've got just a lot of good guests coming on the show yet over the next few weeks. We've still got the Olympics coming up. We got the FedEx Cup. And then we're going to go into the Ryder Cup. So a lot of stuff to talk about, even though the last major of the year was last week, Carlos.
Lots to talk about and looking forward to it. Back Niners, this will wrap up another week of the Back Niners Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Team USA captain for the Ryder Cup, Davis Love III. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Albader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.